Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
Not all reluctant readers are struggling readers.
What fresh hell?
Laughing in the face of motherhood.
There is no overstating the role of the library.
With Margaret Abels
and Amy Wilson.
Once a lover of toilet humor, always a lover of toilet humor, I guess.
A podcast that solves today's parenting dilemmas
so you don't have to.
If someone gives me a book now, I'm appalled. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the What Fresh Hell podcast. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy. And this week, we're talking about reluctant readers.
Reluctant. Did you have any reluctant? You have three kids, all of whom read.
Yes, I have a reluctant reader. I mean, I don't have any kid who's like, hooray, reading, but.
There are those kids out there. I do have one kid who's like, hooray, reading.
You do?
Yeah. Taught herself to read at 4, loves to read, huge reader.
There are those kids. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and this is the thing. Don't take any credit. Like, it's totally random in my life that my kid is that kid. She's like the kid in kindergarten. We went to her, student teacher meeting, and the teacher was like, well, it's good because if I have to do something, I can get Peggy to read to the class. Like, she's that kind of like super reader kindergarten kid. But my oldest didn't really start reading fluently until he was in second grade, probably.
I was actually a very early reader, but
I bet you were. All of my, Amy Wilson.
And you know, they call that hyperlexic?
Yes.
I didn't know that until like last year. And it's not necessarily, you know, all good. Kids who are hyperlexic can have other deficiencies.
Well, I want to start out with some fun facts about reading.
Okay, go ahead.
I feel like this is the kind of thing, it's one of those topics like travel soccer that makes people mostly just feel bad about themselves. And there's really no reason for that. Most children read at 6 or 7. That's the average time that kids learn to read.
Yep.
Many kids learn to read at 4 or 5, but being an early reader does not make you a better reader in the long term. And most kids catch up to their peers in reading by 2nd or 3rd grade.
That's what happened with my kids.
It's borne out for me. I feel like there is that thing of, on the Facebook page, we asked people about this and we got lots of great suggestions for books, but I always talk about going to people and saying, oh, so give me some ideas of what your kid is reading, you know? And people are always like, oh, my kid just finished off the 7th Harry Potter book and they're 3 years old. And, you know, we're starting on the Odyssey next. Like, it tends to become a little bit of this keeping up with the Joneses thing reading. And there's really no reason to dial into it because statistically and scientifically, it does not bear out over time that if your 4-year-old reads all of Harry Potter, they're going to be better off in 3rd grade than a kid who doesn't read at all.
Right. I guess that's true. And my daughter, who has been a reluctant reader, and she's kind of come around, she was definitely certainly aware of who the kids were in her pre-K class who could read already.
Yeah.
And those kids are still sort of marked by their peers that, oh, they're the really smart ones. They can rattle off the 2 or 3. They're the ones who are super smart. And they've been deemed super smart for time immemorial because they were the first readers. And they are going to be smart, but that doesn't mean nobody else is smart.
Right. I just think reading is one of the many things these days that becomes like a foot race. And it just feels like that's not really what reading is. Reading is a lifelong pleasure. And relax, everyone.
If you say so, Mom, it's a lifelong pleasure.
I mean, I don't remember what kind of reader I was as a kid at all. I was the third kid in 3 years, and there's not a lot of documentation about my childhood, and I don't even have a lot of memories about it myself. So I have no idea what kind of reader it was. I was never a great student overall. I was never one of the super smart kids and never, you know, was a standout student. But I love to read. I mean, I love to read everything now, but I feel like my love of reading came later in life, and that's fine. I just know that for myself, I get caught up in the like, these kids are ahead, these kids are behind. Like, I'm trying very hard for myself to let some of that stuff go. And reading is a great area to do that in because it's not a real thing.
Well, I'll take the other side of that slightly, which is that not all reluctant readers are struggling readers.
Yes.
You know, sometimes they're just kids who really like to be active and they read fine, but they'd rather be jumping on the couch.
Right.
But I do think that reluctant reading can lead to struggling reading, which can lead to more reluctant reading. It can be a self-fulfilling, not a prophecy, but like a cycle.
You make a good point. You have to make a distinction between a kid who's just not reading yet because they haven't caught the reading bug and a kid who's not reading yet because they're having some sort of actual processing problem as a reader. That's a different issue.
Yeah.
I just think the thing of like, oh no, my kid is doomed for life because this other kid in their kindergarten just finished off the Harry Potter series and my kid is still reading Pete the Cat is not a thing.
Pete the Cat.
Oh, Pete the Cat.
Let's go back to Pete the Cat because many, many of our Facebook people said Pete the Cat. And my sister has a couple of kids at this age. And she just is like, the Pete the Cat thing, like those books. She has a son named Peter. So he receives a lot of Pete the Cat. I guess there are Legion Pete the Cat books. And she's like, I don't get them. Their appeal eludes me. But they are named over and over again as a
go-to.
Early reader. Yeah,
definitely
an emerging reader.
My early reader loved Pete the Cat. I think they're very accessible. They're kind of like the new, like, See Spot Run. You know, they're the book that's like, See Spot Run. Run Spot. It's easy to follow. Short words. And yeah, I think they're just very accessible. And I think that's what makes them so appealing.
So the appeal is good. I think another problem from maybe this is just an issue I have, but so many of the books that are meant to appeal to our kids and which show up in those take home book fair things that they bring back are just so junky. They're just novelizations of the Bratz movie, right? Or no, let's go back.
Well, let's not say that because one of the people on this podcast wrote the Bratz movie.
Yes. A novelization. They're just like novelizations of the Emoji movie.
Okay. But let me say, back off and back up. I'm going to fight you on this one.
Okay.
My oldest has always been a great sounder out of words. Like when he was two.
Decoding.
He could spell strawberry when he was 18 months old. Like he's got a great sense of sounds and letters, but his decoding has always been a huge problem. Like reading comprehension is much harder for him than, so yeah, it's not decoding. It's reading comprehension that he's
struggling
with.
Decoding is the strawberry thing.
And the piece of the puzzle that's been missing for him is the visualization element. To take the words on the page and see what's happening is hard for him. And I unlocked his love of reading like a movie, like open the door and here it is, by getting novelizations of movies that he's already seen, because it's so much easier for him to read it. And it's like it's bringing back the pictures that he's already seen rather than making him create pictures. That part was really hard for him.
That makes a lot of sense.
Like to picture Hogwarts and picture a train that takes you there and this half platform that you have to walk through. His mind was missing that piece of being able to visualize it. And so it was just like a series of words that were boring for him. But if I got him the novelization of any of the Pixar movies that he's seen, Emoji movie, whatever it is, we have read every single movie novelization that has ever been written, basically. And now he's reading Coco right now. That has really boosted his learning. I think I've said this before and it sounds bonkers, but like I had a kid who really struggled with this. When we first started reading like that, I printed out on the computer pictures. The first one we did was Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. And I printed out all the characters from the movie and I put them on popsicle sticks. And as we read the novel, I would, you know, we would pick them up and almost act the movie out as we were reading it. But it really helped him see what was great about reading. And now he's a much less reluctant reader.
Well, okay. So that you, I feel like you brought up sort of like six things we could right. talk about. The novelization book thing. I mean, you're right. And some of them are terrible, but I guess the point is if your kid really, really loves the Batman, the Lego Batman, picture book story, which somebody wrote in about 45 seconds. That's what I hate about them, I guess, is they're so bad. I think that's got to be undercutting our goal of making our kids want to read more because they pick up the Batman book and it's terrible. But if they love it, then you're getting what you want.
Well, and I'm talking about not like the cartoon versions, like the Magna, whatever that's called, version of it. I'm talking about the actual novelization. So it's like a 20 chapter novel that tells the story of the movie. And that like took away a lot of the intimidation of novel reading for my son. And there's no pictures in it at all. So he still has to create the pictures, but like the pictures are already there for him because he saw the movie.
Got it.
Very helpful for him.
That's
not
interesting.
The cartoony version.
There was a New York Times article just last month or 2 months ago when the movie Wonder came out, mm-hmm. which all my kids read. And then we went to the theater and they loved it. But this article, which I'll put a link up to on our show page, talked about make sure your kids read the book before they see the movie. This is sort of making the opposite point for another sort of reader, I guess, that the point of reading is to imagine. It's about a kid named Augie who has facial deformity, and the first page of it says, I'm not going to bother telling you what I look like. Just imagine something, and then it's even worse than that. And then there's sort of clues as the book goes on that his ear looks like this and his eye looks like that. And it was making the point of kids need to have the ability to sort of imagine this for themselves before they see the sort of reductive movie version of here's the answer of the thing you had to create.
It seems well, that's right. And I
both
think
are true.
And for me, having developed that skill in my son of, okay, this is how reading works. See, it's the words and you picture what's going on. Now we do some where we read it and then go see the movie.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so it's like, okay, see, now it works in reverse. So uh-huh. they're both important parts of it.
Now that you have taught him the skill in one direction, he can use it in the other direction because he grasps the concept.
Yes, exactly.
That's
the idea.
I like that.
Very helpful for us.
One thing I think is sort of an issue too in this time is that as we seem to come to the conclusion every week that you have to model the behavior that you want your kids to be exhibiting.
Oh, if you that is an annoying conclusion that we reach almost every time.
Every week. If you want your kids not to yell at each other, then you need to stop yelling at your kids. If
yeah,
you want your
so
kids
annoying.
To read, you need to model reading. And so much of our reading that we do these days, or I'll speak for myself that I do, is on my phone. I might be reading an article or a book, but it's on my phone. And you and I both know Susan Dominus. She writes for the New York Times, and she wrote a really good article called Motherhood Screened Off a couple years back. And it's not about reading, but she made the point. This is a quote from her. When my mother was curious about the weather, I saw her pick up the front page of the newspaper and scan for the information. All my kids see is me on my iPhone, intently focused on something mysterious and decidedly not them. And I think she's right. And so one thing that I've tried to do in my life is we do still subscribe to the paper newspaper and, you know, have magazines, have things like that around the house. And I try to model for my kids reading something, reading anything.
Yeah.
That's real.
Although I would maybe counter agree a little bit that might be a little bit of a losing battle. I mean, I just think the future is not about paper. And so maybe narrating the thing that you're doing, like, oh, let me just check the weather. Okay. Here's the weather.
Right.
But
that's right.
I'm not sure that like I'm going to subscribe to USA Today so that I can model like looking at the weather. It's just here I'm taking your picture with my phone. Let me go get out my Kodachrome camera. Like it's just a bygone technology.
Well, it is and it isn't because you said something that I forgot to say that Sue says in that article that you need to narrate what you're doing on your phone. I'm just checking Google Maps for. You know, which subway line we should take, and then I'm going to put it away or, you know, tell them what you're reading. But if I have the newspaper out and there's an article about, it has to be the stuff my kids are already interested in. The New York Jets for my kid who loves the Jets, the Knicks for my kid who loves the Knicks, and anything that's about dance or Harry Potter for my kid who likes those things. I save the article. I leave it out. There was an article in the Times over the weekend about an 8-foot 17-year-old basketball player that's being sort of groomed for the NBA. But he like can't sit down or walk or like eat. Right. He's got huge problems, but he's going to be a huge star. And I save those articles for my kids. I cut them out and put them on their beds. And I try to talk about what I think is good about print newspaper. And I agree, I'm like a dinosaur here, is that I wouldn't have found that article about the 8-foot teenager if I didn't happen upon it. And so that sort of, what do I want to call it? Like the blissful accident, happy accident of happening upon something that's really interesting to you and leaving it out for somebody. I think it's a nice gesture, although you're right. My kids would rather keep looking at YouTube.
Yeah. I mean, there's one thing that I will say that we do about this is the beloved whiteboard that I used for so many things.
Speaking of things we like to talk about on this podcast,
you know, menu planning, whatever. One of the things we've started building into that afternoon schedule is a half an hour of reading time. And I sit and read when they're reading. And we use Kindles.
I've been so anti-Kindle, but I just had a long conversation with a friend where she said, no, they're much more book-like than you think. They really
are. They're very, I'm talking the kids get like the $29 Kindle. It's like the very, like, it doesn't light up. It doesn't have anything else on it but books. It's expensive because then the kids are like, can I get this? Can I get this? Can I get this? And I have to sort of monitor like how many books a week they can get, and they have to prove they've read one before they can get another. But I have found it's really good for encouraging reading. They finish one, they want to get something new. You know, they're always coming to me. Oh, can I get this? And so, you know, we've had to put some parameters in place where it's not just about buying stuff, but you've got to read it and then read one before you can buy the next and whatever else. But that's been great for my readers. And so I sit with my Kindle too. If someone gives me a book now, I'm appalled. I'm like, why would you give me this heavy thing full of pages? This is terrible.
I'm just the opposite. Like I use the Kindle app and I'm just like, but then I forget. If I don't see it, then I forget it's there.
You shouldn't. I could never read on my phone. Okay. You have to have a Kindle. It's a different entity.
All right.
When's your birthday?
It's August.
Oh, maybe I'll get you a Kindle this year. It's a really different sensation to. And it's funny because you tap the button on the side to turn the pages. And I find myself, I'm like, oh, I was reading my book and I was flipping through it. And instead of doing the motion where I would look like I'm turning pages, I'll say I'm flipping through it and I'm motioning with my thumb. Like I'm pressing an invisible button with my thumb. I'm totally all in on the Kindle.
There's actually a new kind of Kindle. There's two new ones. One's called the Voyage and one's called the Oasis. And I'm gonna put links to them up on our show page because they also have Audible audiobook capability right on the, right on the, what I want to say, the dock, so to speak. And,
on the doohickey thingy.
Yes. On the doohickey thingy. And, that's great for your kids who enjoy those. So I'm going to put a link up on our show page. And if you
want
to support our podcast,
if anyone wants to buy me a present, go shopping. I want one because what I find is I'm reading, I listen to a ton of podcasts as a podcaster, but I always have a podcast on when I'm in the shower, and I would love to, like, I'm reading my book. Let me listen to it in the shower, then I'll get back to it. But if I had I got to get turned on to audiobooks.
Audiobooks. Let's talk about audiobooks because I actually did a little research. As you know, I talk about this all the time. My daughter is really, really into them, and I've turned to them too as something to use on my commute, sometimes podcasts and sometimes books. And I wondered if that was sort of cheating a little bit.
No.
She devours. I think she's listened to 16 books since September on her on the Audible app.
Cheating.
She is an old phone of mine. Like, this is even cheaper than the Audible. Take your old cracked phone that's sitting in a drawer that doesn't have a data plan anymore, and you can still connect to Wi-Fi and they can download books. And it isn't cheating. I looked this up. I went on understood.org, which is a great resource.
You didn't even have to look it up. I could have told you.
All right,
I should have
now
go ahead.
Well, so I went to Jamie Martin, the assistive technology consultant. He knows all about dyslexia and reading issues, and he says that it's good for a couple of reasons. He says listening to audiobooks isn't cheating because the main purpose of reading is to get information. It doesn't matter what path the information takes to the brain. It's just getting information. And then I thought, well, yeah, but my kid did struggle with the decoding, strawberry, you know, the words that make that up. Her comprehension is great. Her decoding was something she was struggling with. And I thought, well, the audiobook thing, we're just kind of leaning in to the voc that her strengths and not the decoding part. But for kids who struggle with decoding, they're putting all their effort into sounding out the words. It's hard for them. And so they're not grasping what they're reading because each word is a struggle. And when you take that away and let them just engage with the story and the characters, they grasp it in a much, you know, more easy and deeper way. So now I feel great about it.
I could not agree with that person more.
There's a reading specialist named Linda Flanagan, who wrote an article for KQED, which is a public radio station. I'll put this up on the show page too. And she suggested, I thought this was a really good idea, that for a kid who struggles with decoding stuff, that you let them listen to the book on tape, the audio book, and then read it.
It's like my trick. Yeah. So that would be good for my guy. Like, instead of watching the movie, listen to it and then read it.
Read it. Right. And for older kids, my son actually did this. He's a freshman in high school. He's got a ton of homework. He had to read a novel for religious studies he was finding it a little bit of a grind. And so, and he also said, I'm a slow reader. And he is. He's a slow reader because he said he sort of stops and lets his, you know, mind sort of wander off and create pictures, and he gets off the page. So he downloaded the audiobook and listened to it and read it. And he found that it pulled him through the book much more quickly.
He's reading along with the audiobook?
Yes. He downloaded the audiobook and read it. And he said that
I'm going to do that with my guy.
Yeah, that it was faster for him. My 10-year-old, I've tried to get her to do that. She finds that it's a little bit too fast for her. But this kid's in high school. So, and as you know, you can adjust how fast the person's reading.
Right. You can turn it to that lower level.
Yeah. Yeah. So that helps pull them through the book. He actually read the book more quickly for having done both at the same time and felt like he grasped it more too, because of course the narrator is giving all this sort of oomph to it that when they're decoding it, they're not getting.
I want to focus on a couple of things before we break.
Okay.
Because I think the overall idea of reading can so quickly become, my kid's got to catch up, the ball's rolling away, everybody's better than us. And I urge you, listeners, with all that I am and all that I have, to focus especially on your early readers with cultivating in them a love of reading. So, for example, people talk all the time as like reading books to babies. Like, why would you read a book to a baby? A baby doesn't understand a book. Like, it's ridiculous. But that sensation that the baby has of sitting cozy in your lap and hearing a story and there's funny pictures and they'll laugh, like, you start really early with reading is a joyful thing. And I think all of the, yes, if your kid is struggling, get a reading expert to help them figure out what the missing pieces are, solve the reading problems. But for most people, and I found this on WebMD and it made a lot of sense to me, this age breakdown, age 4 to 5, learning pre-reading skills. So starting to identify letters and sounds, pre-reading skills. Ages 5 to 10. So I only have a 9-year-old. So, and all my kids are reading, but ages 5 to 10, learning to read. Ages 11 to 13, reading to learn.
Yeah.
And then that, and so that those parameters made a lot of sense to me. You should not have a 9-year-old who is literally learning to read, sounding out sounds, but learning to read, learning how to decode, learning reading comprehension, filling in the gaps, like figuring out, what does my son always say? When he's reading nonfiction, you know, they'll have a little essay about, you know, Victoria Falls, and then he has to answer questions about it. He was saying,
wait, what's Victoria Falls?
You know, whatever. I'm just using Victoria Falls in Africa, like, or whatever, or about like Mount
Victoria
Vesuvius.
Falls in Africa. Okay.
You know, but he'll have
whatever it is.
Your kids get the little like 6-paragraph essay about Niagara Falls or the Empire State Building, and it's just full of facts.
Yes.
And then it asks them 6 questions about what they read. So they're starting to learn that thing of decoding language. But he's always saying to me, I'm saying, okay, now who discovered Victoria Falls? And he's like, let me go back and reference the text, because that's obviously something they've taught him. But even now, my son has to read a book into a book report, second grader. He's reading like a 16 long chapter book, and he's reading Humphrey the Hamster, which is an adorable book. But at nighttime, we get in bed together. We get all cozy down. We take turns. We do funny voices. Like for me, I just always try to keep the focus on reading is joyful. And to the degree they're struggling with it, reading can be a little bit like, you got to figure this out and you got to learn it. But reading is not a race. It's a wonderful thing to introduce your kids to.
And that's the reading. We haven't even really talked about the reading to your kids. I mean, you're just sort of making that part and parcel, but it's sort of the most important thing, right? When they're little, not even when they're little. I mean, I was still reading Harry Potter books to my kids when they were, I think like 11 and 9, we were still doing it. And then it kind of fell by the wayside.
Oh, I'm still reading to all my kids. 9,
as long as possible.
I'm still reading to them because they like the part. We're like, you take this part, I take this part. And I do like funny accents. And
right.
It's, you know, it's just, it makes it a fun experience. But I also do think it's the kind of thing where if you have to schedule it in the day. And when we come back, we're going to talk a lot about tips from our Facebook followers.
Yeah, I got some tips for older kids who are reluctant readers, and the books that you guys told us are the ones that get your kids reading.
So we're going to take this break, and then we'll be back with that. Thanks, guys.
A lifetime of reading is a sheer joy.
But full disclosure, there are some less than joyful moments along the way.
The wonders of the library.
Ma'am, you've had Secrets of the Jedi Visual Dictionary checked out for 17 weeks. That will be $57.
The nights of reading aloud to your first grader.
And then in the lane there was rah.
That's it. Sound it out. Sound it out.
A rab. There was a rabbi.
Oh, for God's sake. It's rabbit. Rabbit. Let's move on.
Your boys start to pick out their own books. Have you picked out a book, honey?
Tonight, let's read The Super Farting Stink Monster Attacks Toilet Town.
Oh, really?
The School Reading Log.
I told the teacher that you said the school reading log was nonsense, and I should just make it up. And she seemed pretty mad.
Oh, no. That was a birthday miscalculation. I know how much you liked the first book in this series, so look, honey, we got you the entire box set for your birthday.
Books as a birthday present? This is so unfair.
Reading. It might be kind of bad before it gets good.
Why are you trying to ruin my life?
Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value. Margaret, I've been at the research again, looking into metabolic health and, more importantly, metabolic flexibility, which turns out is the key to improved energy levels, better sleep, better fitness, all the things. And I found out about all this because we got a chance to try Lumen, the first handheld device that helps you manage your metabolic health.
Lumen works when you breathe into it. If you do that first thing in the morning or after a workout, Lumen measures your metabolism by measuring the amount of carbon dioxide in your breath. It's science, people. That lets you see exactly what's going on in your body in real time.
Then you use Lumen's app to get tailored guidance to improve your sleep, your nutrition, even stress management. If you're interested in figuring out the effects of different sorts of foods on your body, Lumen is a really cool way to see what's actually happening as your body burns different fuel sources.
If you want to take the next step in improving your health, go to lumen.me and use Fresh to get $100 off your Lumen.
That is LUMEN.ME. Lumen.me and use the code FRESH at checkout for $100 off.
Thank you, Lumen, for sponsoring this episode.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SPORTSRESEARCH, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order.
Okay, we're back.
Before
I hope you did some reading during the break.
Exactly. Let me just.
You should have polished off a novel while we were doing
just
that.
Dog ear my page. I wanted to give a shout out to our listener Nicole, who had a really good tip for sort of kids of any age that I wanted to mention before we got to the older kids' tips. She said she goes and finds books in the library that seem like her kid would really get them, and then she places them strategically around the house. And then rather her kid being told to read them, he stumbles upon them and thinks reading them was his idea, not hers.
That is a clever idea. It gives me a lot of funny imagery, like of mom like salting the house with like books in every nook. But there is no overstating the role of the library. The library, Tuesdays is library day for us. We go to the library after school.
Yeah.
The library is just a game changer. I mean, the library is the room where it happens. Like the kids look forward to going to the library. I can't believe I'm going to get to find a book that I like. And again, I will occasionally, my son was talking a lot about Babe Ruth for some reason. He got into like the Baseball Hall of Fame. And so I immediately went and got that book. You know, those Who Is, and they've got like a funny big headed
Yes.
caricature of the person who is. And so I found Who Is Babe Ruth at the library. Hey, you were talking a lot about Babe Ruth. Here's a perfect book for you.
Yeah.
Fine. So sometimes I help. my middle guy is just a wacky kid and a hilarious guy. But for some reason, he went through a phase where he was really into like warring animals. So he would always, he would always say, could you draw a whale getting attacked by an orca while an octopus fights them? Like, and he just would have these like crazy images in his head of these animals fighting. And it was hilarious, but possibly to an outsider, slightly disturbing. And so I early on told my kids, you can go to the librarian, there's a nice children's section, and ask them to help you find a book about what you're interested in. And then my son would go up and be like, do you have books about trucks crashing? And I'm like, okay, so you're banned from talking to the librarian ever again. He would literally be like, do you have books
fiery
about sharks attacking beaches? I'm like, okay, no. I'll talk to the librarian for you. You have to pass every request for the librarian through me first, because I was pretty sure that she was going to call Child Protective Services on me. But
let's take a moment for libraries. I mean, you can have all the books you want. They're free. Just bring them back when you're done and you can get more. Like, they're unbelievable places that they exist. What else is like a library?
It's the best. And my kids, like right now, all three, my oldest son got into Garfield, the comic.
Oh, God, really?
Way in.
Why don't you steer them towards Calvin and Hobbes?
I bought them Calvin and Hobbes for Christmas. They're like, nope, it's Garfield.
Okay.
But I will say, we were definitely into Garfield as kids, because when I graduated from fifth grade, my brother gave me a stuffed Garfield for my fifth grade graduation, and it was the treasure of my life. So I feel like they're on pace. My fourth grader loves Garfield.
Speaking of appeal that eludes me, but okay.
But this is my point. whatever they want to read is what they want to read.
Right.
I don't get into like, no, the other, oh gosh, you have to read this. No.
My daughter really likes to read graphic novels.
Yeah.
Not like the super duper, like hardcore comic books, but I mean, there's tons. And two that I think are not particular, that are actually very, have great literary merit, and she really loved them, were the Amulet series. And anything by Raina Tegelmeyer. She wrote one called Smile, and she wrote another one called Drama. And my daughter won't put them down. And as you say, like that's what you're trying to get at, right? The goal is the excitement.
My greatest book for my daughter, who was an early reader, but the Princess in Black series.
Oh yeah,
like a 5, 6, 7 year old girl. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
They're great.
My daughter liked those too.
We've read every single one of them.
I actually asked my daughter for tips, because sometimes kids give you the best tips on how to handle kids. And she said, I said, what would you say to a parent with a reluctant reader? And she said, help them find a series, which is obvious, yeah. But let's make that point. She said, if they read the first book of the series and they love it, then they'll get hooked and they'll read the whole thing. Another thing that I read was actually good for older kids was, this is like for teenage readers, is fan fiction. Which is just like what you were saying for your oldest child, but the teenage version. If you have a teenager who loves Twilight, then let them read Twilight fan fiction. Or
when you say fan fiction, I picture something that happens in like the dark recesses of the internet. Like, what do you mean by fan fiction?
There's lots of Harry Potter fan fiction. People take the characters from a show that they love, a TV show or a novel, and they write new fiction with those characters in it.
Okay, but don't have them Google fan fiction, because fan fiction has another connotation as well.
Well, don't have your kids Google anything unless you're unless perfect. You're sitting there.
But I think of fan fiction as like romantic repairings of the characters, shall we say?
Oh, okay. Like
I'm trying to keep it kid friendly for the podcast.
Yeah, like 50 Shades of Repairing.
Yes, like 50 Shades of Harry Potter, kind of.
I think you're right. I think you would have to rather carefully sort of prune
curate
it.
Curate this, yeah.
Curate it?
I'm worried about just giving the suggestion, go check out some fan fiction.
Right.
Because I think that's going to be a real weird swamp that you end up in.
It'd have to be by teens for teens, or by 12-year-old girls for 12-year-old
girls. Like reimaginings of the stories, not just like descriptions of the couplings.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Another fun thing, and we happen to live in a town that has a great one, but I think a lot of places have this, maybe not for like people who are really in super rural areas, but a lot of cities have, LA, when we lived there, had an amazing one. And the town I live in has an amazing one, which is great, is children's book fairs. We went, and a lot of children's authors come, and it's really fun. We went, and, you know, then you go and you say, this is the guy who wrote the book that you love. And they get to meet them, sign copies, and that has been really fun. And there's always like wild things walking around. And it's very like, it's a day about the love of books, which is just a fun thing to participate in. The Los Angeles Book Festival is just amazing if you're anywhere near Los Angeles.
We get to do that in New York too, take our kids just to book signings and things. And I agree. My son got to meet the Captain Underpants author, illustrator.
My son,
and he was mute.
Son would be mute.
Mute and just like mouth hanging open. Yeah.
And while we're on the subject of Captain Underpants, I feel we must address the books for boys about pooping and farting.
Ugh, I hate them.
I know. Yes, we hate them. But to the theme, my boys have loved them. And when we asked on the Facebook page, what gets your kids reading? A lot of people cited his name's Dav Pilkey, who writes those Captain Underpants, Dog Man, Cat Kid, all those books. And my son last year at the Children's Book Festival picked up a book called The Butt Book. And it's just a long book about, you know, pooping and farting. This year he wanted to go back because he knew there was a sequel out. And it's all, I can't even remember what it's called. It's like farting or something. But listen, he loves to read them, and stay with our true north of a rule. What your kid loves to read is what they should be reading.
I think the Captain Underpants books are actually adorable. And there's a really good Netflix movie actually based on them that's really cute and got my kids sort of belly laughing. It was very, very inventive. I think that they go down from there. That there's some other ones that are really just terrible. Not inappropriate, just like so stupid. The Captain Underpants ones have that sort of underlying boy friendship creativity thing that's really...
Yeah, they're very clever. They're really naughty, clever. But in a very like loose
right.
way.
And then some of them sure. are just naughty. But yeah. I don't know.
As long as they... I also feel like it helps us have that conversation about what's appropriate and inappropriate. And I'm team if your kid loves to read it, and it as long as it is not actually inappropriate, that's what they should be reading.
I will say that there comes a point, right? My fifth, sixth grader was still pulling those Captain Underpants books off his bookshelf. Like, no, we're not reading that again. It's time to read something new. Those are for little boys. But, yeah. You know, once a lover of toilet humor, always a lover of toilet humor, I guess. A couple people suggested the Magic Treehouse books.
Yeah. They're huge.
They are, I think they're very well done. They're perfectly written for the emergent reader, but it introduces so many topics. And then there's one about pandas, and there's one about Abraham Lincoln. There's ones about everything.
Volcanoes.
Yeah.
My crazy kid likes the disaster ones. Like we've read earthquake, volcano, tornado. Like he only likes the disasters.
There's another series that all my kids have loved in the sort of 9 to 12 year old range. The You Wouldn't Want to Be books. Do you know these
Never
ones?
Heard of them.
I love them too. They're kind of graphic novels, but they're nonfiction, and they're all, you wouldn't want to be on an Irish famine ship. You wouldn't want to build the Egyptian pyramids. And it's all like stuff you really wouldn't want to have been at the Boston Tea Party.
He might really like that.
They're so funny. They're so, you know, they're so full of really fascinating tidbits. And so my daughter and I read the You Wouldn't Want to Be on an Irish Famine Ship. And now we're into like finding documentaries about the Irish famine because, this book is so, so interesting. So I find that they're a great way in to nonfiction and finding topics that then they can do a deeper dive on.
Yeah, that's fun. And I think we have just started scratching the surface of nonfiction. Mine are, you know, 9, 7, and 5. And nonfiction is fun, but it's a whole different category.
Yeah, this one manages to make it fun and just a little bit gross and a little bit silly and also chock full of stuff. I come home and tell my husband, would you believe that there was this one ship? And I like them because I learn a lot.
And I think that funny part and that element of, someone suggested Shel Silverstein, which, you know, I mean, I grew up on those books and love them so much, but the silliness and the funniness of books is a great thing to just tap into. And there's so many of them, but like even for little kids, my kids loved, we had a book called You Should Definitely Not Take an Alligator to School. And it's just the silliness of children's literature is so much fun.
A lot of people suggested Mo Willems.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think we might have read every single one of his books.
The Piggy and Elephant. And my favorite one of his is Nuffle Bunny.
Ugh, we love the pigeon books. We've read every single pigeon book. I mean, he's fantastic. He's so great.
He just gets it, right? He just gets the 5-year-old laugh button and he knows how to push it.
Yeah.
He really does. My friend Susan suggested anything by American Girl, which I agreed. The American Girl books are fabulous and they have they'll do ones that are sort of research. My daughter's reading the one about Nanea right now, who's a Hawaiian girl alive during the invasion of Pearl Harbor. So it's all this stuff about what it was like to live during World War II on Hawaii, which is interesting. But then they have this whole sort of lighter thing. What kind of friend are you? Quiz book. And here's, you know, some spa amazing things to try with your friends. And she gobbles up all of those too. So they offer both the the entree and the appetizer sort of reading, if you see what I'm saying. But they're all well written and she loves them.
And I think also it brings you into a whole other category of stuff, which is having conversations with your kids. And, you know, when does Pearl Harbor and war and those kind of things come up? You know, they come up around a lot of things, but it's great for them to read about stuff and start, you know, it's a big world. And sometimes our kids' worlds can get a little bit small. And my husband's grandfather, who's turning 90 this year, he's from a small town in Texas. And he always says, you know, he grew up I don't even know if he graduated from high school, started a business when he was like 17, you know, but he is a voracious reader. And he always says, I've been all over the world because I read. And he's learned everything about the world. And I think that for, it's just a wonder of reading. And for kids, I find when I know what they're reading and we're talking about what they're reading, it sparks all sorts of really interesting conversations.
Yeah. Yeah.
It widens their world in such a magical way.
It really does. You know,
but don't widen it into weirdo fanfiction is what I'm telling you. So like, you know, wide, but not like, don't Google Twilight fanfiction. That's not going to go well for you.
Or let them write fanfiction. Yes. And you know, again, and you can define
the right
that.
Kind.
Yes. The age appropriate. One thing that is totally fun in the age of Twitter is that you can reach out to authors, or your kids can reach out to authors on Twitter, and you don't have to be a Twitter aficionado to send a tweet to an author and say, hey, I really loved your book, and they'll write back. Like I'm shocked. I wrote to Colson Whitehead after I read The Underground Railroad, which won the Pulitzer, I think in 2016. And I just, you know, I just sent him a note and he wrote back and he's like, thanks, man. That's awesome. Call me man. But like, that was unbelievable to me. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was, I couldn't believe it. And so we do live in this age where you can actually, yeah. I mean, I remember as a child writing a letter to Judy Blume and then like kind of throwing it out because I didn't know where to send it. These people are reachable now and you don't have to stalk them or anything. But if you have an older kid who really sparked to something, have them send a note on Twitter because you would be surprised who will write back.
Yeah. And I mean, we wrote a letter, I don't know, when my kid was five, to somebody, Tom Hanks or someone from like Pixar movies. You know, that's a fun thing to do. It's like there are real people out in the world who are creating this stuff.
Another suggestion somebody said was Highlights Magazine, which my daughter got as a birthday present from her godmother. And now we just keep renewing it every year because it's the perfect thing to take. Oh, like when we're going to the doctor's office and, you know, you're going to have to wait around or on a plane ride. It's just something besides your phone and the games.
Highlights Magazine is like the mafia, though. Once you get in, you're never getting out.
No,
exactly. You get the gift of it at some point when you're like four, and then you have a Highlights Magazine subscription for the next 25 years.
But, you know, these days, magazine subscriptions, I think it's $11 a year or something that.
It's no big deal. No, it's great. Highlights is great. And they have another one that we love called Puzzle Mania.
Oh,
which is, I think it's by Highlights. That's puzzles and stuff. That's fun.
Okay, so let's go through our main takeaways. I think we came up with a ton of good stuff, but I want to like just jam through it all. For younger kids, well, for all kids, we're going to model reading, and
of course,
when we're using our Kindles, make sure they know that they're reading. For younger kids, use the bookstore, use the library, let them pick stuff out. Use book traps that Nicole suggested.
Book traps. Yeah, that's when you just leave them around.
Yes.
And I just, this weekend, redid the bookshelves in our house. And it took a long time. It was like a 3-hour job. But I took out all the old broken like board books that are falling apart, and like the top shelf is Magic Treehouse and Dav Pilkey books. And it's books they actually want to read. And so keeping the books, you know, not letting the bookshelf just become the repository of doom, which happens.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, it's hard. Believe me. It took me a long, it was basically my Saturday.
You got to go through them. I mean, gosh, my own bookshelves, I go through them and find ones. I still have books from college that I think, okay, if I really ever need the Theban plays again, I think I can probably find a copy. But then you find behind that something like, oh, I really wanted to read this and I never did.
Can you talk to my husband who like won't get rid of his like MIT textbooks? I'm like, this stuff is probably not even relevant anymore. I will say on that topic, what I was basically doing was redoing my playroom. So now with a 9, 7, and 5-year-old, I this weekend changed my playroom over into like a reading room. Like I put a table to write and do art on and a really comfy couch to read on, because they're not really playing with Hot Wheels cars anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, having a good space where they're happy to read is a great thing.
This is inspiring me that I should get some of the books off the bookshelves in their room and bring them down to the den where they hang out. But what I do though with my older kids is I get the interesting coffee table books. Like there's a book called What If? It's not written for kids, but it's hilarious. It's like, what if a, what if like 35 hurricanes all like hit the world at the same time? Would the, you know, would there be no more world? Or like, if, could you send a bottle rocket to space if you really got enough velocity? And it really tries to take apart these questions and answer them seriously. And it's a, books like that are great to sort of leave out, leave around, even for older kids, because they'll pick them up and breeze through them. The Hamilton, that Hamilton book about the making of the musical.
Yeah.
Interesting to dip in and out of. And then for older kids, our tips are, don't be afraid of audiobooks. Really, that's for all ages, but audiobooks are a great thing to read instead of the book, with the book, after the book, to set reading time on a weekend where that's what you're doing. Yeah, build it in. Encourage them to read articles and magazines and newspapers, sort of model the analog reading. And hey, I just saw this article about the Jets' new quarterback, and I thought you might be interested in it.
Analog reading. I like
that. Analog reading. I think this was a really useful episode. I'm going to put links to all of this
stuff. I'm taking notes. I'm like writing down ambulance series. I have all this stuff that I'm picking up. I'm like, you wouldn't want to be. I'm just picking stuff up. I'm learning from you, baby. Learning and growing.
I'm going to put links to all the research we discussed today. But even more importantly, I'm going to put links to all the books that we suggested and our Facebook listeners suggested on our show page.
You're going to be busy this week.
I know. You're going to go to whatfreshhellpodcast.com and you're going to be like, amulet. All right. And wonder, somebody else said this. And you're going to be able to buy some books and you'll be supporting our podcast and you'll be getting good books at the same time. Or go to the library with and print out the list and bring it.
But we have a link. Okay. Yeah. Just don't go to the library. The library's closed. Use our links.
Okay. So we want to know what you're doing with your reluctant reader, and you can tell us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/whatfreshhellcast.
Or you can reach out to us on Twitter at WFH Podcast.
You can send us pictures of your kids reading on Instagram. We're also What Fresh Hell Cast on Instagram.
And as Amy said, you should come to our website, whatfreshhellpodcast.com, and check out all the links and stuff we talked about today.
That's Reluctant Readers.
Resources. That's our episode, guys. Thanks for listening. We will see you in 1 week.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.